Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian. I'm Ben DiBono.
And I am Matt Anderson, and we are back!
We are back. Wait.
You forgot the...
Hello? You usually say hello and welcome.
But I also say bringing you theology.
Oh yeah, bringing you theology at warp speed. We are back!
We are... No, that's your...
Yeah, yeah, so, we have a little role reversal here today.
Yeah, literally. In studio today, we are... sitting in the exact opposite chairs as we usually do. So for 35 episodes, Ben, I've sat in that uncomfortable chair. Tell everybody how it feels.
This sucks, man. How's my chair doing?
So comfortable. I'm sitting,
really ergonomic, isn't it?
I'm sitting behind the computer where we control things, so like I can... This is one of my favorite clips we have.
Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen.
You're running the show.
Yes, I am, Ben, and we... We have a reason why I'm running the show today, and we're going to tell you why, but not yet.
Oh, I thought we were going to start with that.
You want to start with that?
Maybe. Let's first
start with the news about next week's episode.
Okay.
Because so this is really important.
A little happy, then a little sad.
So let's... Well, not really sad.
Yeah, well, maybe a little bit.
Not for me. So next week on December 11th, as we record, we're here December 4th, Sunday afternoon.
The 2011... Yep. For the future listeners.
Yeah, so next week, Sunday, December 11th, 2011, we are going to be doing our much anticipated listener appreciation end of the year jubilee. I think I said that wrong.
No, I think you got it right.
It's end of the year listener appreciation jubilee.
Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Yes.
Now there's a little thing that you got to click. Just got to make you aware of that.
Thank you. Ben's teaching me how to use
pointer.
This. Okay, good.
Captain Matt takes the helm.
Yeah, so... Ben, tell everybody, what is this end of the year jubilee?
Well, it's a time for us to reflect on all of the best and worst sci-fi Christian moments over the last year. So we are celebrating together.
Yes, we are. We actually just met. We had a little lunch together, and we put together our categories for next week's award show.
A little bit of a meeting.
Because it is an award show, Ben.
Yeah,
and if you want,
lots of awards.
If you want an idea of what it might be like... Go to your iTunes and look for something called The Life Report.
Yeah, that's a dangerous prospect.
So go to...
Oh, we've talked about The Life Report before.
I know.
This is our old podcast we ran into the ground.
Yeah, but we haven't talked about it for a while. So as a reminder, go look, search for The Life Report, and you'll see an end of the year jubilee there also. And you can get an idea of what next week will be like, only hopefully better, because... Yeah. It's not that great.
Yeah, because Sci-Fi Christian has always been a better show than The Life Report.
So, Ben, let's talk about the categories.
Okay.
So, we put together 10 or 11 categories.
I think we have 11 now.
Yes, and we're open to more if you guys have more, but we're going to need them relatively soon as we prepare the clips to play on the award show.
Yeah.
So, Ben.
Or there might just be a few clipless categories if we don't get to it.
Yes, possibly. Yeah. So I'm going to read the categories, and then you read the nominees.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't have the piece of paper.
So in no particular order, here are the categories. Guest host of the year.
Oh, I can name these nominees.
Okay, and the nominees are...
Kobe, Skip and Talon, Dave Johnson, and the Sci-Fi Diner.
Scott and Miles.
So
these are all the people that we could remember that were on our show. If you were a guest host and we forgot you...
Please let us know.
Please let us know, and you will also be a nominee. All right. These are like going to be some of our top categories. I'm just going to read them because they're in order on my paper. Episode of the year.
Oh, lots of good ones there.
We narrowed it down to five. Yeah. But listeners, if you think we missed one, just send us an email at...
feedback@thescifichristian.com.
Which will now be coming to me.
Yeah, so your emails will never be found.
No, so your emails will be responded
to.
You
don't ever check your email, man, for the Sci-Fi Christian.
Yeah, I do
not.
I
checked it once.
I will now. This is because no one writes matt@thescifichristian.com. They send it to feedback or something else.
They usually send it to lostsucks@thescifichristian.com.
So episode of the year, Ben, now we've, like I said, we've listed off five, but there might be other ones that the listeners...
But I think the winner's already decided. It's hands down Lost Part 2.
Lost Part 2.
Everybody remembers that as a classic.
So here's the episodes. The Dark Knight on Trial.
Oh, good one. Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings was a good one. We also had our clone episode called Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, Dissecting Dr. Horrible.
That's correct. And finally, I Want to Believe, our famous second episode about are aliens compatible with the Bible.
Yeah, that was a good one.
So there, those are our top five that we could think of, and we'll be looking for your votes. For that, also our top five like, okay, this isn't our top five of the year, which would be
top five of the year.
Yeah. So every year or every five episodes, we do a top five episode.
Yeah.
So
are we coming up on one of those?
No, we just had one.
Oh,
wasn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, we just had top five dreams the last episode a month ago.
I'm with it.
Okay. So. I'm guessing top five dreams isn't going to win this year's award.
I thought it was a good episode. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
We had some good dreams.
We did have some good dreams. So send us in your pick for your favorite of all of the top five episodes.
I know Kristen Larson had one of our listeners had sent me an email saying she loves the top five superpowers episode.
Oh, really?
So yeah.
When did she send you that?
I don't know, last week.
It just came up randomly?
Well, no, she was emailing about something else. So here's a little story. So okay. Our podcast hosting service Podbean was down for maintenance for a day, and so she was like, I can't get the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's the end of the story.
That's pretty much it. And then she said, are you still doing the year-end episode? I said, yeah, we're still doing the year-end episode. So don't forget about top five superpowers.
Okay. Yeah, that's smart. So already has one vote.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough to beat.
Good. So we're also going to do our best interview of the year.
Yeah. Nominee is C.K. Kubasik.
Yep. Well, I mean, and if you can think of any others that we missed, then let us know.
If you want to just make one up. I suppose you could include the Sci-Fi Diner in there.
Ben, I think this is going to be your favorite award. Do you remember the lack of follow-through
award? Oh, yes. The lack of follow-through award. So if you're still devastated by... The Stand read-along. If you're still looking for that Alan Moore episode.
If you're still wondering, didn't they commit to doing a weekly podcast?
Then you have an opportunity to vote for your lack of follow-through award.
Yeah, we've come up with a lot of great ideas.
We've had great ideas. Yeah. Movie commentaries.
We wanted to do an episode on how aliens might have started the Egyptian culture. And
I promised to do some hardcore research.
Yeah, so...
And that promise is still out there.
So, again... We just brainstormed at Arby's to put these lists together. You might be thinking of other things that we're forgetting.
There's probably a lot.
So you can call us. Yeah, give us a call at
612-4121-SFC.
Or you could email me at feedback@thescifichristian.com.
Yep.
More categories. We had talked about doing sci-fi movie of the year, just kind of what we think is the best movie of the year. Do you want to stick with that?
Yeah.
All right. So let's hear from the listeners.
Definitely Green Lantern.
Yeah. I'm going to vote for Green Lantern.
Tough to beat that one.
Oh, this is going to be an awesome one. The sci-fi feud of the year.
Yeah.
We have some great contenders. We have Damon Lindelof versus George R.R. Martin.
That was a good one.
We have William Shatner versus Carrie Fisher.
Ooh, that one's still ongoing.
Yeah. We have the Sci-Fi Christian versus the Sci-Fi Diner.
Yeah, to celebrate our epic victory.
We have Stan Lee versus any movie that won't let him do a cameo.
Or as I prefer to call it, Stan Lee versus himself.
And finally, we have Ben versus Matt.
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
Or any number of episodes.
Ben, we also have best sing-along of the year.
Oh, we've proven some talent this year. In fact, one thing that was kind of jogging my memory a little bit, Matt, is that you've actually done a Christmas CD.
I have, actually. I've done more than that. I've done full-length albums. I've done a Christmas album.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a great song on there that was very similar to a song we sung in church this morning.
Yeah.
And I think that we could maybe play that at the end of today's episode for everyone.
Yeah, you know, didn't we play that at the end of one of our podcasts once?
Yeah, maybe, but it's that time of year again.
It is that time of year.
Because you heard Jingle Bells last year doesn't mean you can't hear it again.
That's a good point. So best song, sing-along, this could be any time that Ben and I have sung on the podcast,
yeah.
Not counting it's time for sci-fi news.
Oh, yeah, because that's every week.
Yeah. We're also looking for nominations. Now, we're not going to actually give you any options for this category, but we'd like to hear from you for nominations for worst episode of the year.
Yeah, there's been some doozies.
Okay, that's all we'll say about that.
Yeah.
And Ben, we had already talked about the Life Report.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, the Life Report had a quick and sudden death here this year in 2011.
It is, in fact, no more.
So we won't be able to do an end of the year jubilee for them.
No.
So we're gonna have a Life Report episode of the year.
Yeah, for all you people who are crossover listeners.
Yeah, who have been dying to
all three of you
dying to find out three. I mean, that might be a little high. I think we're talking to Daniel Butcher.
Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Daniel.
We appreciate your loyalty.
Yeah. Our last two awards that we have here, debate of the year. Now, there's been some great ones.
There's a lot of good debates. Dark Knight on Trial.
Yep.
Lewis versus Tolkien.
Yep.
Others.
Our fringe debate during the sci-fi feud.
Fringe debate.
I think we had a debate when we were doing the predestination talk.
Yeah, maybe.
Possibly.
All sorts of stuff.
And this last category, I'm not positive we're going to actually do it because there might be too many options, and I don't know if we want to go through all the clips to find it, but awkward moment of the year.
Ooh, several.
Yeah, there's been a lot. So if you listener, if you know of any that you'd like us to cover.
Unfortunately, the best ones in there were stuff we had to edit out for being inappropriate.
Yeah, we do have quite a few good clips that only Ben and I have, and some select listeners have heard.
Yeah, so, if you want to hear those, we can't put them out publicly because of our image, but yeah.
So that's it. Next week, 1 week from today, the end of the year celebration.
That's exciting times.
It will be good. And that will be probably our last episode of 2011. Yeah. I'm going to be putting together some sort of clip show per se, like kind of a retrospective of
that's right, we have reached a clip show.
Yes, already. It would be kind of like a highlight of 2011.
Everybody loves clip shows,
but we won't actually be on that episode live, and then we'll be moving into 2012, Ben.
Yeah,
so is this a time where you kind of want to tell people where things are in your life?
Should we tell them a story?
Let's tell them a true story.
Okay, so this is a story that began this summer when Matt and I were taking Greek together.
Oh, wow.
And Greek dominated our lives rather exhaustingly, you might say. So towards the end of Greek, a couple of things happened around August, which you might notice was the time where the Sci-Fi Christian ceased to be a weekly podcast.
I was just going
to
grab my iPod and just see where we started to really diminish our timeliness.
It was around August.
Okay.
So around that time, two things happened. A, my exhaustion level with Greek spiked through the ceiling, and B, there was a few personal family matters that came up that required a great deal of attention.
Hmm.
And so I had to pull back a bit from the Sci-Fi Christian.
Much to my dismay.
Much to Matt's dismay. And that pullback has continued for the last couple months. And then there was a happy for me, but maybe sad for the Sci-Fi Christian occurrence a few weeks ago.
Yes, and you posted this on Facebook, so some of our listeners have already seen it, but...
In fact, I was promoted at church.
Congratulations, Ben.
Position of executive pastor.
Wow.
That's kind of an unusual title, so what it basically means is I'm in charge of organization stuff. Skip Crust, who has been our guest host,
yes,
listener, and contributor to the Sci-Fi Christian, is still the lead pastor at Epic Life Church, where I work. But I am the executive pastor, which...
So what does that mean? Are you guys like equals now?
No, not equals.
He mentioned that you guys have equal decision-making power.
Yeah, we're working together to make decisions, but he's still the boss.
So he's the boss, yeah. But you have equal...
I'm like the sub-boss.
You have equal decision-making power, so could you technically fire him?
Ooh. I'll have to check that church constitution and get back to you on that one.
Technically.
Probably not. Okay. Not the direction we want to go in, though.
Yeah.
That is requiring a great deal more of my time.
So now let's pull back the curtain and let me tell you what's going on with my life.
Yeah. So it's like personal confession time.
So there I was. So Ben, some of the stuff that you're talking about with that promotion was a little bit behind the scenes. I wasn't even in the loop on it.
No.
And so,
in fact, you were asking me about when are we going to record this? I can't tell you because I don't know.
Yeah. So I was like, what's happening to the Sci-Fi Christian, Ben? Yeah. Ben never returns my calls, never returns my emails. He's, here we go, in air quotes, so busy.
My gosh.
And so I'm like, what is this? Is the podcast dying right after we got nominated for a podcast award? Which is funny because you even said you didn't even vote for us.
I kind of forgot.
Which is even worse.
Yeah.
So
a shift in priorities, you might say.
Yeah, shift in priorities. So Ben and I were able to have a great conversation this past week to put together a plan for how we can keep the Sci-Fi Christian going.
We met at Lian Chin, which is our one of our favorite restaurants.
That's basically where all the big stuff happens.
Yeah, that's where you and I first had an initial meeting
mm-hmm.
about church stuff long before the Life Report even began. But that's where the Life Report was first conceived, was at Lian Chin.
Yes. So to speak.
Yeah.
So we are now going to tell you, the listeners, who we consider you guys friends. You're listening to us every week. We all learn together about theology, and we share this interest in sci-fi. So here's our plan. We want you guys to be the first ones to hear.
Yeah, well, outside of...
Aside from our Sci-Fi Christian writers, who actually had top priority.
Yeah. Is it really fair to say you're the first ones to hear if we're just announcing it publicly? Like, well, if Barack Obama stands up to address the nation, he's like, I want you guys to be the first ones to hear what's going on. You know, that's a little bit disingenuous.
Well, I mean, I guess what I was trying to get across is, this is all fresh news. Like, this has, within a seven-day period of where we have established this.
It's Sunday, and then we decided this Thursday.
Yeah, so we're coming straight to you guys with this. So,
so big happenings.
Here's what's happening. Starting in January, we are going to start with a new bi-weekly schedule.
Yeah.
1 week. Ben and I will still be doing the Sci-Fi Christian together.
Hooray.
And on the other week, I will still be on. But, listener, you could be with me. Yeah. What does that mean?
Well, it means that I will not be here for the other week. I am a once-a-monther now, so to speak.
And so, how can a listener get on the Sci-Fi Christian and be a guest host?
Well, they can email you at feedback@thescifichristian.com, and I guess it's all up to you from there. I'm not really going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, so, so contact me. Contact me. Let me know if there's a topic that you're interested in doing on the show. And
if you want to do another Lost episode.
Lost Part 3, Lost Part 4. I mean, we could just keep going. There's going to be some big things. We'll probably try to mix in some other types of episodes. Just like if maybe I could Skype you in, Ben. Don't want to take too much of your, quotes again, valuable time. I know you have a lot going on right now.
I do. So I'm mainly avoiding the Sci-Fi Christian.
Mainly avoiding it. So that is what's happening. So Sci-Fi Christian not dying.
No.
Well, I guess maybe a slower death than we originally thought.
No. We got to spin it, man. This is a revitalization.
A relaunch.
Relaunch. No, because that implies that we crashed into the ground and now we got to get up again.
It's Lost Part 2.
Lost Part 2.
That's all I'm saying.
That was not our best work.
I don't think
our hearts were in that one.
Well, that was at the lowest depths of the valley that we were in, where I didn't know what was going on. You were still keeping secrets from me, partner and co-host. Getting
developed and all that. Psh,
man.
It's confidentiality, man.
Yeah, whatever.
We executive pastors have to, have our secrets.
I have kind of like a more, I have like a bigger role in the church now. You raise my youth directorness to like a higher, because I have an inside track in the church.
Probably not.
You have equal decision-making power as the head pastor. What can you do for me?
Well, I just told you.
Nothing? you're throwing the podcast at me? Thanks.
Yeah. You can be in charge of the Life Report ministry.
Oh,
if you want to get that.
Can I bring that back?
Well, we'll talk about it.
All right, cool.
I don't know if there's much of a future for the Life Report, but
so
we had some great history episodes.
Oh, the history episodes.
So, yeah, stay tuned for this, people, because maybe in some of those in-between weeks, you might get to hear some of our great episodes on the history of Christianity that we did on the Life Report.
We should definitely do that. That's a way to get our numbers up also, like episode-wise, so people are like, oh, bi-weekly, that stinks. Well, don't worry. Maybe I could get the history episodes in here.
Brandon Gibbs, our head writer at thescifichristian.com, has in fact heard the history episodes and never gave us any feedback on them, which I think is quite understandable knowing what the content is of those unique experience.
Brandon, if you're out there listening, write us in and let us know what you thought.
And please be honest, because our feelings won't be hurt.
No, not at all. No. Actually, call in so we could play you as kind of like the tease for when we start playing the history episode. Yeah. So call us at 612-4121-SFC, Brandon, and
let us know what your favorite history episode was.
Yeah. So, well, Ben, I think we got all the important news out of the way. So Ben is leaving the Sci-Fi Christian forever, and next week is our big celebration.
Well,
so
that's not entirely true. Like, by forever, we mean down to once a month, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll see what I can do. And so
just push me a little bit farther out the door.
And then next week, again, send us in your nominations for all of the categories we previously mentioned.
Yeah.
You have 7 days. This end of the year celebration is coming up quick. Anybody send us any nominations other than Kristen?
No, maybe.
No, that's a no.
Maybe I haven't kept up on the email quite as much as I should.
Well, Ben, I think it's time.
Okay, for Sci-Fi News.
It's time for Sci-Fi News.
Can I just say, I love pressing the buttons here.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
It feels so powerful.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a bunch of new clips that we can play in between things. That'd be fun. Okay, yeah. So, Ben, what do you got for Sci-Fi News this week?
Ooh. I got a little Dark Knight news when we get to it.
All right. Here's what I'll do.
And kind of a neat tie-in to the topic at hand.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So what? Besides Dark Knight news, we're not quite there yet. What else do you got?
Well, how about you start?
Oh, you want me to start? Yeah. All right, sure. All right. Breaking Dawn, a movie that you really enjoyed.
Oh my gosh, why is this news?
Breaking Dawn, I just wanted to say, you know, we don't really like these Twilight books and movies.
Yeah, we get no interest in them.
There is a huge fan base, and possibly some of our listeners are really into it.
Have you seen our demographics?
Listen to this.
Guys in their 20s.
It's the first place movie for the third week in a row. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning.
That is a tragedy. American culture is busy crashing itself into the ground as we speak. Thank you, Twilight.
Ben, how would you feel if I told you that there was going to be a biblical-themed action-adventure movie about the three wise men?
Okay.
You would feel okay about it?
I'm not sure what I feel. It's a bit bizarre.
Let me up the ante. How would you feel if I told you that this movie was called Unholy Night and was written by Seth Graham Smith?
Are you serious? This is crazy. This could be actually quite hysterical.
I know. I'm actually excited about it.
Unholy Night.
Unholy Night.
A movie about the three wise men.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Watch for that. Probably next year.
Seth Graham Smith, author of Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, as well as Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Correct. Have you read that Abraham Lincoln one?
I have not.
Are you planning on it before the movie?
No.
Okay.
No. We can't add that to the lack of follow through. Though you said you were going to... There could be any number of books
that could make it onto
the lack of follow through award. I think you should win that award just by default.
No. No. Okay. Next news. So Fox has some shows coming up in their January schedule that we've been mentioning here in the show. So I thought we would just...
Ooh, The River.
Oh, I actually didn't have that one here listed. But I thought for the sake of our audience, we'd just give some premiere dates. So Touch with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
It's going to be premiering on... actually, there's a preview on January 25th. But then the official premiere date, March 19th.
Ooh.
And the one that I'm really excited about. Starring Jorge Garcia.
Oh, Alcatraz.
Alcatraz premieres January 16th, 2012. Ben, which of those two are you most excited about?
Probably Touch.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Hands down, Alcatraz is the one.
Yeah, but I'm kind of sick of J.J. Abrams doing this thing.
What makes you sick of him?
Well, it's just his shows haven't, you know, I got kind of sick of Fringe. I'm not watching Fringe anymore.
Yeah.
So
I'm still watching it.
Yeah.
Actually, I didn't watch last week's episode.
I just don't know if he's got it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Are you still watching Once Upon a Time?
I am. Yeah.
And what do you think of it?
I'm enjoying it, but it's not. It's definitely not a masterpiece, but I like it quite a bit. I mean, I stick with it every week, but let's say, for example, tonight I'm going to miss it. I'm probably not going to like immediately watch it tomorrow. I'll watch it eventually.
Yeah. What about Grimm? Are you still watching that?
I've only watched the first two episodes. I'll keep up with it, but it's low on my priority list.
Yeah, I only saw the first two episodes of that one, and I was not impressed.
Yeah. So, here's a show you do like. Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. It's a good show.
Have you heard of what they're planning for season 3 and 4?
Yeah, this was great news. This was one of the news items I was going to bring up.
Yes, sure it was.
They're talking about shooting those two back to back. How awesome would that be?
Well, and now you've told me this, that the third book,
Storm of Swords,
would be impossible to do in one season.
Impossible.
And so it makes sense that they do it. What about the second book, Clash of Kings? Is that going to be an easily done in one season book?
It'll be a little harder than the first season, but it's doable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So season 2 will be Clash of Kings.
Do you have any idea when season 2 is going to debut?
Probably around April, like last year's did.
How excited are you?
I'm way excited.
Yeah. Are you going to get the Blu-rays when they come out?
No, because I've got HBO Go. And in fact, this is kind of cool. So HBO Go, if you're an HBO subscriber, you can, you know, get access to their entire library on, you know, online. And up until recently, it was only available on the computer, but they have since made it available on Roku devices. So now it's like I can get all of HBO's library, instant streaming in HD quality on my TV.
That's cool. Awesome.
That? Yeah. So wow. I am very much enjoying that.
So did you finish Wire yet?
Yeah. Loved it.
Wire, from what I've heard, is kind of universally claimed to be one of the greatest shows ever.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
So you watch it now.
Yeah.
Would you put that on the list of...
It would be number one for me.
You're saying it here.
Yeah.
The Wire is the greatest show that's ever existed.
Yes.
Wow. How, better than Firefly for you.
Yeah. I would have to say so. And especially, here's what pushes it over the edge for me, is the way it made me think about things in our world that I haven't thought about before, in addition to being a compelling story, in addition to having great characters and great writing and all of that, it made me look at our world and issues much differently than I have before, and made me really wrestle with stuff. So I loved it. I think it's not only a great show, it's an extremely important show that people should watch because of what it makes you think through.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's the highest recommendation I think you've ever given.
It is easily the best show I've ever seen.
Wow.
Love it.
I will watch it eventually.
Yeah.
And then we can come back around to this greatest show of all time thing.
Yeah. Speaking of HBO Go, Matt, I watched the Back to the Future trilogy recently.
Yes.
They were on there in November.
So we talked about this at Lian Chin, but go ahead and tell the audience what you thought.
Okay. So you were asking me what, you know, I view this stuff with nostalgia. So what does somebody like me who doesn't have nostalgic feelings for Back to the Future?
Let's make it clear. I view it with nostalgia.
Yeah.
So I asked you, watching it for the first time in your late 20s, how do you feel about it?
First movie. Really, really enjoyed it. It's a little dated in a few places, but it didn't bother me that much. I would give it 4.5 stars. Mm-hmm. Really, really enjoyed it.
I would give it a 5, just for the record.
Mm-hmm. I figured as much. And probably if I had grown up with it, it would be a 5. But it was dated enough in a few places where it took up half a star. Second movie, I thought the beginning was so-so. I didn't really care for all the parts where they were in the future that much. And so it was kind of like, this isn't that great. But then after that, it got awesome, and in some ways the second half of that movie is probably better than the first movie. The first half is worse than the first movie, so I would put it a little bit below the first movie at 4 stars, but I loved the second half and thought it was really great.
Definitely give this one a 5 too.
And then the third movie was horrible.
The
beginning was okay. I like the fact that it's tied to the other two, but the plot was awful. I would give it 2 stars, and that's kind of being generous.
Okay. This one, I agree, not obviously my least favorite of the 3-4 probably for this one for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is some nostalgic blindness you got on there.
So, good. So back to the future.
I'm glad I watched it. It was definitely worth watching, and I would gladly watch either of the first two again, but would probably skip the last one.
Excellent. 2 quick more stories, and you can add in whatever you have after that.
Oh, okay.
So, Christian Bale has officially passed on Darren Aronofsky's Noah movie.
That's a little sad.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah.
So, thoughts?
I just gave my thoughts. Right, that's perfect. A little sad.
And the last piece of news, superhero-related. Do you know who Booster Gold is?
Yeah.
What do you know about him?
I know that he's not really a superhero, and he, time travels or something like that.
Well, I think he is kind of a superhero, but yes, he does time travel.
He doesn't have any real powers or anything.
Probably technology-ish.
Yeah.
He's got a robot friend.
Yeah, a little dog.
No. It's like a flying robot.
I don't think I actually know that much about Booster Gold now.
Well, you're going to be able to if you watch his new show on the Sci-Fi Network that's in development.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. A lot of big fans of Booster Gold out there. A lot of... Justice League International heavily features Booster Gold.
Man, this chair is uncomfortable. How do you do this for 2 hours, man? I got to lean forward, and my back is killing me.
I leaned forward every episode.
Wow.
I know. Well,
I'm sorry.
Think back. Yes, finally, some understanding of what I went through. So think back to when I would grab the microphone and put it in my lap and just lay back, and then...
Oh, I'm gonna give that a try.
Yeah.
It's
way better, right?
I just bumped it against my beard,
it does make a little bit of sound sometimes, but worth it so that you don't have...
Deal with it.
Long-lasting pain. So...
Ooh, I like that.
Well, Ben...
To the Batmobile.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Well, Matt, it would appear that principal photography has wrapped on The Dark Knight Rises.
Wow. That was kind of fast.
Bale Nolan era is over.
It's over.
That's
he has
sad.
Hung up his cape and cowl for the last time.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of sad. So a couple interesting tidbits that have come out. First, we've had some more pictures.
Yes.
Only this time, not spy photos, but actual production photos that appeared in Empire magazine.
Yeah, I saw them.
Did you hear about where Dark Knight Rises takes place chronologically?
I did, and this might be considered a spoiler, but go ahead and tell everybody.
Turn off your iPod for about 20 seconds if you don't want to hear this. It's taking place 8 years after Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, that's...
Or Dark Knight.
That's kind of a surprise to me.
Yeah.
Because I expected it to maybe be a couple months, not right after Dark Knight, but...
Well, they could have even done it right after Dark Knight.
The fact that they're doing 8 years makes me think they might be going for a Dark Knight Returns feel, where maybe Batman's a little bit retired and he's forced to come out of retirement.
I think that could be what they're going for. So I think it's going to be great.
Wow.
The first 6 minutes are going to be available in theaters attached to a Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Yeah, so I emailed you if you wanted to go see this. So I did not understand it to be the first 6 minutes in the movie. I heard it to be a prologue.
That's what they mean. It's like they did this for Dark Knight. You know, the bank heist scene at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
They released that separately.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
Oh.
So this is going to be something similar.
Okay, I understand. Because you replied to my email saying you don't want to see it out of context or whatever. But
yeah, this is where I'm kind of weird, because I don't mind reading stuff like in the story so much. But when it comes to the actual movie, I don't like watching clips.
Yeah.
So I would rather see it in context of the movie.
That makes sense. I thought it was a prologue that would be separate from the movie itself.
No.
So it is just the first 6 minutes of the movie.
Exactly.
Interesting.
But here's the unique twist on this whole story, Matt.
What?
Last night, I dreamed that you went to go see the Dark Knight Rises prologue, and I caught a little glimpse of it in the theater, but then didn't stay for it. But you proceeded to spoil me by describing it in great detail, eliciting endless amounts of rage from me. So it's a little bonus stream for last week's episode.
That doesn't sound anything like me.
I know.
I would never spoil anybody.
I know. I was unhappy with you.
So you were like furious.
Yeah.
You know, do you ever experience where you dream, you get mad at somebody in your dream, and then when you wake up, you're actually kind of mad at them?
Yeah, I'm a little mad at you right now.
Are you really?
I feel like you should apologize to me.
I had a huge crush on a girl in first grade.
Uh-oh.
Huge. I remember her name, but I'm not going to say it here on the show. Let's just call her Jenny.
Okay.
And, you know, I would do like the nice things to get her attention, like pull her hair and push her a little bit from behind.
First grade romance.
Yeah. But then I had a dream that on the playground, she was super mean to me.
Yeah.
And guess what? My crush was broken. I never liked her again.
That's it.
Take that, Jenny. So, any other Dark Knight news?
I don't think so. Did we have any Take That Science? I know you'd sent me an article on Bigfoot I never responded to.
I don't even remember sending it to you.
Okay.
Hey, I want to talk about Dark Knight since we're still in sort of spoiler mode for Dark Knight.
A little bit.
So this is going to be a picture that was released. I think it was a spy picture, though.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
And I want to talk about it with you since I've seen it, you've seen it. So this is going to be minor spoiler.
Yeah.
So there's a picture of Bane holding up a picture of Harvey Dent.
Yeah, that wasn't a spy photo. That was released in Empire magazine.
Oh. Officially. So they're okay with that getting out there in the world.
Yeah.
So what do you think that's about? Is Two-Face going to make an appearance? He died.
I think that Bane might have found out, because, you know, they did the whole cover-up at the end. And so maybe he finds out and he's trying to expose them or something. I don't know, but it sounds awesome.
So you think he's going to find out that Harvey Dent became Two-Face and he's going to show that he is a bad person?
Yes.
Interesting. So Harvey Dent, do you think there's any chance we could see him again?
I think it's pretty unlikely.
Did you know that Harvey Dent, originally, they were looking at Guy Pearce to possibly play him instead of Aaron Eckhart?
Yeah, that would have been a good choice, too.
Yeah, good choice.
But I liked Aaron Eckhart a lot. Good. So that is, I think, all I have for Dark Knight Rises news.
All right, well, are you ready to get to our main topic? We have not even announced what our main topic is.
Ooh, little dream action
today.
So last week we talked about our dreams. Just being a jerk over there now that you got control.
Inception. So that's what we're talking about today, Ben.
That's a great movie.
It is a great movie. Look what I have right here in my hands.
I know, but you're thinking of returning it, which is just ridiculous.
I'm trying to... I don't need all the movies I have. I got this for $5 on Black Friday.
Well, no, you don't need all the movies you have. You don't need Batman and Robin.
Yep.
You don't need the Superman collection.
Yep.
You do need that one because it's one of the greatest movies of recent years.
I mean... The reason I bought it is because I had watched in the theater. I think you were possibly there.
I was not.
Okay.
You went with Daniel Butcher.
Daniel and some other people. And then I saw it back in April. And then I watched it again in preparation for the episode. I mean, I could easily watch it again and again. It's a great, great movie.
It is.
So we are going to peel back the layers of Inception today.
Yeah.
So Ben, this was your idea for the show. So kind of tell me, what did you want to accomplish with this episode about Inception? What was kind of your main purpose?
Well, I think it's kind of interesting because it's got a lot of great philosophical questions in it that ought to make us think about the nature of reality and how that plays into our faith. So I want to get into that a little bit with you and then maybe talk about some of the different theories, particularly involving the ending of the movie. So if you have not seen Inception, A, what is wrong with you? B, you're going to get spoiled.
Yeah, so... probably just stop listening, watch it, and then come back.
Yeah, you've heard all the important stuff on the show already.
Yeah.
So
yeah, don't worry about listener feedback.
No.
We've got a new listener. We don't know how good it's going
to
be.
Yeah, we have a voicemail we have not listened to yet.
Okay, so this is actually kind of an exciting show. So, all right, Inception, Ben, take it away. I've got, I took notes when I was watching, but why don't you go ahead and...
Well, you've took some notes on the history of Inception, so I want to hear that.
Yeah, the history of Inception. So, development... So, first of all, Inception came out in 2010. I think it was, do you want to say July?
Yeah, it was July.
July 2010.
Or June, one of the two.
Summertime.
J-1s.
Yeah, one of those J-months.
Jaloon.
So development...
Combination action there.
Okay, thank you, Ben.
Oh, I'll just lean back in my chair and take a break.
Okay. So Nolan started developing this movie 9 years before it was actually released.
Whoa, crazy, man.
Yeah, so he wrote an 80-page treatment of it. But at that time, it was about dream stealers. And he had in mind that it was going to be a horror movie.
Wow.
How would you have felt if it was horror?
Well, I'd like to see Christopher Nolan do a horror movie. I think that would be kind of interesting.
So I don't know if I have it readily available, but yeah, here it is. Nolan has said that he was influenced by that era of movies, talking about like the late 90s, early 2000s. So he said, here were some of his influences. Actually, this is a direct quote. Influenced by...
That's even better.
Listen to this. That era of movies when you had The Matrix.
Yep.
You had Dark City.
Love it.
You had The 13th Floor.
Haven't seen it.
And to a certain extent, you had Memento. So he actually quoted his own movie as a influence on it. They were based on the principle that the world around you might not be real.
Yeah.
You
haven't seen Dark City.
I haven't seen The 13th Floor or Dark City.
I've heard 13th Floor is not that good, but Dark City is one of the major holes in your sci-fi knowledge.
It's that good.
It's that good.
Wow.
I'd say it's one of my favorite sci-fi movies.
Do you even own it?
Yeah.
What do you own it on? DVD or Blu-ray?
Both, actually.
Ooh, I can take it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yeah, it's the director's cut, which is what you should watch.
Why?
Like,
what's the difference?
There's a fair amount of difference. There's a little bit of voiceover at the beginning of the normal cut that kind of gives a little too much away.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, it's better to just kind of let the story slowly unfold for you. So it's a great, great movie. But before you take it, how's Shawshank Redemption going?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up because as I've been listening to our past episodes in preparation for next week's big end of the year celebration, I think I took that movie back in March.
Yeah, I love that movie.
And haven't watched it yet. So I commit, listeners, right here.
Here we go.
For
this
the second
be the winner. This
for
the winner
second
the
time.
Follow through.
I mean, because next week is our season finale.
Yeah.
I need to have it done by then just to close that hole. That mystery will be solved.
Yeah.
So next week, I'm going to return to you live on the air, Shawshank Redemption.
And I will loan you Dark City
next week. We'll do an exchange.
Yes.
So continuing on with the history of Inception. So like I said, he originally envisioned it as a horror movie. And some of his inspirations for the concepts he wanted to talk about would be lucid dreaming and dream incubation. Are you familiar with that, dream incubation?
No. What's
well,
that?
Let me just follow a link here because I don't know what it is. And I was
show prep live on the air.
I'm not going to Google it. I don't know what it is. Should I just Google it over here? Talk for a second about lucid dreaming.
Well, so lucid dreaming is when you fall asleep and you realize, don't open that one because that's going to try and open my VPN. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. You're going to have to hit the X.
Right here?
No. See, there you go. Oh, now hit that little box there.
Okay.
Now you can Google to your heart's content.
Right here?
Yep.
Are we still recording?
We're still recording. You're the boss, man.
I don't know how to use all this stuff.
This is a little foray into technology lane here with Matt Anderson. So, dream incubation. So, lucid dreaming. Lucid dream. Well, yeah, but that's what you're supposed to be Googling. How's it going?
No, lucid dreaming. You're talking about that.
Yeah, I'm talking about lucid dreaming. You're supposed to be Googling dream incubation.
Yeah, I got it right here.
Okay, good deal.
So lucid dreaming, it's when you dream, but you realize...
I'm the one talking about it.
Oh, go ahead.
So you realize that you are, in fact, awake.
And so what happens then? You can control your dream?
You can control your dreams. So how about that?
Dream incubation is a practice technique
from Wikipedia.
Of learning to plant a seed in the mind. Oh, in order for a specific dream topic to occur, either for recreation or to attempt to solve a problem. For example, a person might go to bed repeating to themselves that they will dream about a presentation that they have coming up or a vacation they recently took. While somewhat similar to lucid dreaming, dream incubation is simply focusing attention on a specific issue when going to sleep. Several studies have shown this method to be successful over a period of time.
Should we try this week, Matt?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we're not going to be able to talk about it until next month.
I want you... No, we can talk about it next week.
On the end of the year? Yeah. Celebration?
So, you give me something to focus on, and I will give you something to focus on.
So, every night before we go to bed, we have to repeat this over and over.
For the next week.
Okay, let's just do the same one and see if we can accomplish it.
I've got one specially picked out for you.
All right. Since one of your top superhero powers, as I've been listening to the past episodes, was flight. You really wanted to be able to fly.
Yeah.
I want you, every night before you go to bed, to concentrate on being able to fly in your dream.
Okay. I want you to concentrate on beating down on Damon and Carlton.
Beating them up?
Beating them up for your disappointment over Lost.
I'm not disappointed, though.
Because, but in your dream, you will be.
No, that's not how it works. How about if I try to get on the Lost Island?
Okay, that'll work.
I'll try to get on the Lost Island. You
that's
try to
probably fly. What you dream about every night.
I do, so it's going to be really easy.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. Okay, back to the history of Inception.
Yeah.
So he wanted these concepts of lucid dreaming and dream incubation, but the studios felt that he needed more experience with larger scale films. So as we know now from history, he ended up working on Batman Begins in 2005,
yeah.
The Prestige 2006, ooh. The Dark Knight 2008.
Wow.
So after those, he was finally ready to put together Inception.
I think after Dark Knight, he could have done just about anything.
Yeah, exactly. So he spent 6 months putting kind of polishing off the script just to make sure it was perfect. And they Warner Brothers purchased it in February of 2009. And so just a little over a year, we were actually sitting there watching it. So
that's awesome.
Did you know that the filming spanned 6 countries and 4 continents?
Whoa.
Yep. So yeah. That's the kind of that's the history of its creation. And it ended up, the official budget was $160 million.
Wow. I'd do okay on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of cool that it was influenced by some of those 90 movies because it really does have that feel a little bit. It feels like The Matrix. It feels like Dark City.
I always thought it kind of had a film noir.
Yeah, it does, but so does The Matrix a little bit. Dark City definitely does.
No idea. I mean, I never got that from Matrix.
Maybe not so much there, but Dark City definitely has that film noir feel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but Inception has that as well, and it's one of the cooler elements. I like it when they kind of combine those different genres and styles a little bit.
I would like it, Ben, if you don't mind. I know... Usually you don't like to do this, but not you personally, but you people in general. I want to start with the end because there's a lot we can talk about, but the end is so awesome. Oh. Let's just get right to it.
Yeah, so this is one of the questions I wanted to ask you is what is your theory regarding the end of Inception?
I think, this is not what I would want to have happened, but after looking at the facts and seeing it 3 times, I'm prone to believe he is still dreaming.
Was he dreaming the entire time?
In some ways, I think the entire movie was all dreams.
There is some heavy evidence to support this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, go ahead. No, so
no, I want you to run down that because I lean a little bit more on the other side, but I want to hear why you think what you think, and then I'll give the counter case.
Okay, upon the third viewing, I noticed some other specific things that really stuck out to me when it was supposed to be in the real world that felt dreamish. For example... think back to early in the movie, right around the time where he first encounters Eames.
Oh, which one's Eames?
Eames is Tom Brady.
Tom Brady, the quarterback of the...
Nope, not Tom Brady. What's his name?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy. Yep, not Tom Brady.
Tom Brady does not make an appearance in Inception.
Tom Hardy, you know, Bane.
Awesome.
Bane from...
New England Patriots show up randomly. That's
see?
How I knew it was
That's
a dream.
That's how I knew his dream.
I think you're watching the wrong cut.
Director's cut.
Yeah.
All right, so enough of that. Tom Hardy.
Yes.
Who is not a football player.
He is not.
He's an actor.
In fact, he is.
He's going to be playing Bane.
Yes.
So remember that?
Doing a marvelous job of it.
They were talking in the bar.
Yes.
And then he had to run away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so first of all, this idea of being chased by a shadowy corporation is kind of a dreamy-like theme, you could say.
Right.
But specifically, there's a scene where he's running through the aisle or alleys, running... through restaurants, and he gets to this point where all of a sudden, for no reason, the walls of this alleyway, they get thinner and thinner, and he's trying to push his way through. And this is also a common theme in dreams, where you're trying to move away from people, get away, and you gain stuck. And it just, even as you're watching it, it seems unusual. Like, why would all of a sudden these buildings be shaped into like a small little narrow alleyway?
Can I give the counter argument there?
Just to that specific
point. Yeah, just to that. So, I think it's possible that you could have a government agency that does, you know, that's kind of off the books, black ops type of thing.
The COBOL Corporation, yeah. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, so they might be a little bit more shadowy and mysterious in the way that they operate. And let's face it, where he was in the world, it, you know, was a city that's probably grown up and changed a lot and wasn't necessarily all planned out at the same time. So you could have buildings that kind of run into each other, and it's not unheard of.
That's why upon the first view, and it, you don't really think anything of it. You're just watching it. But if we're trying to kind of look for evidence that maybe there is something happening there.
Yes, I think those are very good points. I am simply going to give the counter argument so you can kind of bounce around with it, so to speak.
All right. So what else did you... tell us now what you think.
Well, was that it for your...
Okay, let me think about this. Okay, here's another one, but I actually have an argument for it.
Okay.
But we learned that at the end of the movie, Sato is inside of Cobb's limbo.
Yeah.
Sato is living inside the world that Cobb and Mal created.
Yeah.
So why would Sato's limbo be Cobb's limbo?
Because it's a shared dream.
Yeah, they actually answered that in the movie. But the first couple times I saw it, I was like, this is kind of weird. But they made a point of saying that that whichever character, whichever dreamer had been in limbo, that is the limbo that exists, whichever one was in their mind.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so I think that makes sense.
So I think that one makes sense also. Let me see. I had some notes here. Talk for a second while I find you more evidence.
I can give you a bit of evidence in favor of your position.
Yes, please.
So the technology they use is really vague in terms of how it works. We never really get much explanation for how Inception technology works. They just kind of plug a few things in, and away they go. So it's another part like the Shadowy Corporation where it could be that the movie just doesn't explain it, or it could be that it's intentionally vague to give the idea that it's maybe one of those elements in dreams that isn't fully developed but kind of makes sense within the logic of the dream.
Yeah, actually, on the third viewing, I picked up, because I'd always thought that, like, they never really go into how this is even happening.
Which is intentional on the filmmaker's part to leave it vague for that reason.
You think so, that you can feel like it's a dream?
Yeah.
They did mention that it was developed by the army. That's the most that they go into explain it at all.
Yeah, but if you were dreaming, and you were dreaming about some advanced technology, and you were rationalizing it with dream logic, that's a fairly, you know, cliched explanation to come up with.
Yeah.
So it would be something that would be readily available for a dreamer to invent that this was army technology.
Yep.
Because you can do just about anything with that.
Here's another one. If I'm not mistaken, in the very last scene where the top is spinning and we see Cobb walk off with his family, I believe that his children are wearing the same clothes that they had been wearing all the time where he had those visions of them without being able to see their faces.
I think they changed their clothes in the last scene.
You're sure of this?
Fairly sure that their clothes are the same every time up to that, but they change in the last scene.
Okay. But also, why would they be... They also are in the exact same place, like even in position-wise, that they had been all these other times he dreamed about them.
Yeah. I think that the kids are one of the best evidence for it being a dream.
Yeah, and that scene has a dream-like feeling to it.
It does.
Do you know Michael Caine's character also? He doesn't even have a name in the movie.
Yeah.
We know he's Mel's dad, but we don't really know what the connection is other than he maybe was Cobb's teacher at one point.
Yeah, that's one of the other bizarre parts of that last sequence, is that we know Michael Caine's character has been some sort of professor over in Europe.
Yeah, so why is he there?
And then he's all of a sudden in America.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things that doesn't... It could make sense. It's like it's not a plot hole, but it also is vague enough where it could be seen as being sort of a dream type thing.
Yeah, and we never know who is actually watching the children then.
No.
Because Cobb is away. We know that Mel's dad is in Europe.
Yeah.
Maybe the mom. I think actually, wasn't there a scene where...
No, she committed suicide.
No, not Mel. The grandma, I guess. Gotcha. Mel's mom.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a scene where he talked to his kids on the phone?
Yeah.
And then
there's some adult.
There's somebody on the other end.
Yeah.
But then again, if he's a fugitive, how is he calling his home, like, from afar and not being tracked back to...
Well, he could be in a country where the U.S. doesn't have jurisdiction to deport him.
Jurisdiction.
Yeah.
Strikes again.
So there's all these... It's like, it could be this or it could be that.
Okay, so tell me a little bit of the reasons why you think it could be a dream other than what we've already talked about, and then tell us where you actually land.
Well, I think that one of the evidence against the dream is that, obviously, in that final scene, he spins the top... And every other time he was in the dream world, the top keeps going and going and going, and it does wobble.
It does wobble a little.
So that would seem to indicate that it's not a dream. However, if you argue that the whole movie has been a dream, then we have seen the top fall over, even within the dream.
So, but the totem might just be a dream manifestation.
That's what I mean, is that just because it's wobbly, if the whole movie has been a dream, that doesn't mean anything. Because then the totem is just a reflection of what he thinks is reality. Mm-hmm. So the reliability of that bit of evidence doesn't quite hold up in maybe the way you might hope it does.
Yeah. So Ben, right here, on the spot, sci-fi Christian, does the top fall?
You know, I was coming into this conversation preparing to defend the side that it's not a dream. And I think you've swayed me a little bit in the other direction. I think that it probably, the evidence, it's certainly ambiguous and intentionally so, but I think the evidence does push in the direction of the whole thing being a dream.
I think it does. Yeah, which is kind of, some people might say, if the whole thing was a dream, that'd be stupid. It'd all be a waste of time, but it's not. It's an amazing story. I would be okay with it if it was all a dream.
Well, and how do you interpret the ending? Because he spins the top and walks away, and I think that's really significant.
Yeah, because this is the first time he didn't stare at it. Yeah. He turned his back on it, essentially.
So what do you think the significance of that is?
Is that he doesn't care. If it is a dream, he doesn't care anymore. He just wants to live his life.
He is accepting...
He's accepting the reality he's presented with.
Yes. So reality... He's making the decision that perception is more important than reality.
Mm-hmm.
If this is a dream, he doesn't care because he has the perception that he wants.
Exactly.
I have a follow-up question for you on that.
Okay.
But first, maybe we should read a couple of the comments we got on our Facebook page.
Wait. We can. Is this about the end of the movie? Because I have some more end of the movie thing.
Okay, let's finish up end of the movie, read Facebook, and then I will do my follow-up comment regarding Cobb not caring.
Oh, okay, good. So, this is, again, from the great source, Wikipedia.
Oh, I love Wikipedia, yes. The source of all sci-fi Christian show prep.
Do you mind if I just kind of read straight from it?
You know
there's
what?
I think there's some really good stuff here.
Wikipedia, in the words of Michael Scott, is the best possible information out there, so I say we go with it.
All right. The film cut, this is, again... straight from Wikipedia. The film cuts to the closing credits from a shot of the top wobbling ambiguously. Oh, before I read on, have I told you the story of what happened in the movie theater as I was watching this movie?
Mm-mm.
So you can picture the scene, the top spinning. Whoa, wobble, whoa, whoa. Nope, still spinning. And all of a sudden, boom, cuts to black. And then somebody in the crowd shouts, I can't say it because it's a swear word, D word.
think we can say the D word on the Sci-Fi Christian.
No, you can't, because we're Christians. Hit the microphone. So that was my funny experience there, wobbling, top wobbling, awesome. D word. Okay, so the end has invited speculation about whether the final sequence was reality or...
I think at the end of
Another Dream,
Dark Knight Rises, you should stand up and literally yell, D word!
Okay, just that.
Just D word.
All right. Nolan confirmed that the ambiguity...
Ambiguity?
Oh yeah, why am I saying that wrong? Was deliberate, saying, I've been asked the question more times than I've ever been asked any other question about any other film I've ever made. What's funny to me is that people really do expect me to answer it. The film script concluded with, behind him, on the table, the spinning top is still spinning, and we fade out. However, Christopher Nolan also said, I put that cut there at the end, imposing an...
Ambiguous?
And no, ambiguity.
Ambiguity?
I know I can say it. I'm not sure why I can't today. Ambiguity.
You're going to sit in the captain's chair. We're going to need some proper pronunciation.
Yeah, imposing an ambiguity. Ambiguity from outside. Gosh. No, ambiguity. I got
ambiguity.
It. Imposing an ambiguity from outside the film. That always felt the right ending, like the right ending to me. It always felt like the appropriate kick to me. Kick?
Yeah.
The real point of the scene, and this is what I tell people, is that here's what we just talked about. Cobb isn't looking at the top. He's looking at his kids. He's left it behind. That's the emotional significance of the thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it's a really powerful ending.
And then Michael Caine has something to say about this too.
Oh.
In September 2010, Michael Caine explained his interpretation of the ending. This is his quote, if I'm there, it is real because I've never been in the dream. I'm the guy who invented the dream. What do you think about that? Michael Caine saying his character has never been in a dream.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
Yeah.
That doesn't work because I dreamed about you last night.
Creepy.
And you're real and were present in my dream at once. So
Nolan himself noted that I choose to believe that Cobb gets back to his kids because I have young kids. People who have kids definitely read it differently than those who don't. That's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
He indicated that the top was not the most crucial element of the ending, saying, I've read plenty of very off-the-wall interpretations. The most important emotional thing about the top spinning at all, Oh, and here it is again. That Cobb isn't looking. So that's interesting. You have kids. I don't have kids. I think it was a dream and he didn't actually get back to his kids. You favor the idea that it was, he was awake and that he gets back to his children.
So we seem to line up.
Yeah. So maybe
someday, maybe someday if you reproduce, you will in fact view Inception differently.
Perhaps. All right. Let's read some listener comments.
We'll have to watch it together after you spawn.
All right. Benjamin, tell me how to get to the comments.
Okay. So you see, I see Chrome. Click that little guy.
Okay.
Up we go.
Oh, here we go. Yep. All right. So Wayne Henderson writes in, my mind is still blown, or at least I'm dreaming that it is.
Oh,
deep. Totally deep, Wayne.
That's wild.
Our friend James from Seattle.
Hi, James.
I'm just going to read it because I haven't actually proofread it. Hopefully you did, Ben.
No.
One of the subtle moral themes that hit me from Inception is the weight of memories. Memories can easily shape, if not define, a person, possibly including their core beliefs. Mr. Cobb keeps a haunting vault full of his most significant memories, and it's very difficult for him to move on from reliving them over and over. Though we can't always choose our memories, I think it's important for us to consider what kind of memories we are creating for ourselves and others. And he says, super excited about this episode. That's a really important point, actually. Yeah. What kind of memories are we making for ourselves?
Well, that's kind of interesting, because normally we think about Inception in terms of dreams, but to think about it in terms of memories...
Yeah.
How do our memories shape us?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Cobb is definitely, whether it's real or not, he certainly is obsessive about what he's doing.
Yeah, there's certain memories he goes back and relives over and over.
Yes.
Ben, should we read that quote together?
No.
I'm going to ask you something, and then you respond.
And if the movie is real, then you also have to take into account that Cobb's memories are putting other people in danger as well. If it's not real, then all that's pretend. But if it is real, his memories, because his wife keeps coming back to haunt mm-hmm. him. And so his refusal to let go of that is putting other people at risk within the dream world.
Yeah, because he won't let go of some of the guilty memories.
Yes.
Speaking of that, Ben, you're waiting for a train. A train that'll take you far away. You know where you hope this train will take you, but you can't know for sure. Yet it doesn't matter. Now tell me why.
I don't know.
Because we'll be together.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever.
But we won't know that I'm only going to be on here monthly.
We'll be together in 1 month.
Once a month. Our monthly togetherness.
All right, Ben. What were you going to say after I read those comments?
Okay, so Cobb makes the decision that reality doesn't matter. Do you agree? Perception is more important than reality.
This is interesting. Do you think that really what the movie is trying to say is that reality is your perception?
No, I don't know that the movie's necessarily trying to communicate a viewpoint one way or the other. I think it's taking us through Cobb's emotional journey and saying this is where he winds up. And the idea is to make us think about that issue.
I don't know. I'm prone to say reality is more important than what we perceive. Like, what is actually true is better than what we think is true.
So let me ask you this. You are, in fact, a Christian here on the Sci-Fi Christian.
I am.
What if you were to wake up and you realize that this life you've been living has been all an Inception-style dream? And so you wake up into the real world, and the real world, Christianity, does not exist.
I know. How messed up.
What would you continue to believe it?
Well, here's the thing about that, though. And we learned this in Inception and in real life, is that once you wake up, this all starts to feel like the memories of this life start to fade away. And all of a sudden you start to remember the real world.
But presumably you've been in this dream for a very long time.
Well,
long enough for it to make a very big impression on you.
Which actually makes sense, because all of a sudden I'm a famous internet celebrity.
I know. Got like
with my own
150 fans.
With my own show and a Facebook page.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a dream.
Not everyone gets a Facebook. Oh, wait.
We're living the dream right now, Ben. So if I wake up...
Would you be prone to... Because you obviously take your faith seriously.
Yeah.
Would you be able to just let it go if you woke up and you lived in a world where Christianity did not exist?
I think you'd have to let it go.
But could you?
I don't know if you could. I mean, I'm sure I would still think about Jesus sometimes. But I mean, think about it. You're saying I wake up. Think of all the crazy things that we actually do dream about, and we wake up and we realize, okay, that let's not dwell on that. That was obviously not real. Or you're obviously not mad at me because I didn't really spoil Batman for you.
You didn't.
But so if I wake up and I realize I dreamt up a religion, I'm just going to have to let it go.
Okay, additional twist. You wake up, and not only is Christianity gone, but religion and any belief in God does not exist in the world you wake up in.
Oh.
It is 100% atheist.
I would then start a religion based around myself.
Oh, okay.
Because I know a lot of things, like I could...
But nobody's interested in it. They don't have the drive to believe in God the way that people do in this reality.
I mean, what am I going to do? I don't know. I would still believe in something.
It's faith, so you would continue to be a Christian even if you knew that it wasn't real.
I don't know. I would believe in a being of higher power.
But you just kind of wing it.
I would have memories of how it works. But I would just, obviously, I'd be like, okay, well, clearly Jesus isn't real. Because I'd drop that. But there must be some God.
There must be some God. So you'd start from there.
I'd start from there.
And go from there.
How about you?
I don't know. I think that logically what you're saying makes sense. But I think emotionally, we would have a harder time disconnecting from our belief system if we were to suddenly realize that it's not real than we think that we do.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'd be different if, like, tomorrow in this world, all of a sudden, we learn Christianity is not real. That would be hard to pull away from if there was, like...
Sure,
like
we found it involves other people.
Yeah, but if you wake up from a dream... These memories are going to start to fade. It's going to seem not real. And it would be easier to detach yourself from a faith that you had in a dream than it would be to detach yourself from a faith right now.
That's true. But I think we're also presuming that these dreams are different than our normal dreams, where if you're in an Inception-style dream...
Like maybe I'm in a coma right now?
Yeah.
I got in a horrible car accident?
Yeah.
What if cars don't even exist? What if I got in a cliff accident?
Yeah.
Like I fell off a cliff.
What if it's like ye olde medieval times?
And now I have a sweet accent.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got a pretty sweet accent like this. More British accent than I'll read all of Colin's emails in.
Right. Oh, speaking of Colin, I'm so glad you brought him up.
Oh, yeah. We got big Colin news.
Yeah, he has a brand new podcast called Trek News and Views. You can find it on iTunes. Check it out.
Hooray.
Thanks, Colin.
Good job, Colin.
So, I have another theme that perhaps has come from Inception.
Well, let's go for it.
So... They put out this idea that the most powerful thing is an idea.
Hmm.
Once an idea takes hold of your mind, you can't get rid of it, and it moves from one person to the next.
I think there's probably something to that. I think that ideas are enormously powerful. Certainly that's where we would have to say that everything comes from in terms of good and bad in the world. It starts with somebody having an idea, and ideas are infectious. Because people want to believe in something, and so people want, there's this drive for truth, and so I think it's an enormously powerful idea that ideas are, it's not a great idea that ideas are at the, it's like idea inception right here. Yeah. An idea within an idea, that those are really kind of the fundamental building block of the human experience. I think that there's a lot to that.
Good.
How about you?
Yeah, I think I obviously do. I am on board with that. That's why I wrote it on my Word file.
You like that idea?
Yeah, I like that idea.
That idea.
So I have some notes that I took while I was watching it.
Oh, I'd love to hear
that. Do you have some notes that you took while you were watching it?
No.
Not at all?
No. I we're done with my notes. So I went through my two questions.
so that was your prep. Oh, you just had some questions in your head.
I've got my iPad.
It's not even on.
I don't out you when you do embarrassing things. Oh,
like, okay, so these notes are in chronological order, so they might not make structuring of a show sense.
Okay.
All right.
We'll wing it.
The top spins at the beginning of the movie, and we don't see it stop. That's interesting.
Ooh. Yeah. he's in a dream, so that would make sense.
Exactly. That's the point.
Okay.
And so that
I'm not sure what we're trying to say by that note. That wasn't as profound as I was expecting it to be, actually.
The dream world represents the dream world. Stop it. The dream world represents a person's persona and self. That's interesting.
I don't know if that's accurate.
I think it is.
Did they say that in the movie?
Yeah, like Arthur is kind of like classy. He dresses up. So when they are in his world, it's like, oh, hotel, dress up, everybody. But then all of a sudden we're in Eames's world. Guess what? Snow.
Yeah. If we were in your world, we'd all be snuggling on a couch with Damon and Carlton.
Mm-hmm. On an island.
Yeah. That'd be creepy.
5 minutes in the real world equals 1 hour in the dream world. Do you think that's accurate?
Well, the movie said so.
But do you think it's accurate in real life?
I have no idea. That'd be science, man. Take that, science.
Oh, that, speaking of that, did you watch the Dream documentary on here called Dreams, Cinema of the Subconscious on the Blu-ray?
I think I did. I don't usually watch special features, but that
ever? Why not?
Because they're all basically the same. I don't need to see how a CGI creature was created for the 15,000th time. I got that out of my system somewhere around the time Jurassic Park was released.
Whatever. Okay, listen to this. Suspension of disbelief is necessary to believe in shared dreaming through a machine briefcase.
Yeah.
Or briefcase machine.
Yeah.
They said that at some point in the movie, or I wrote that down during the movie.
Yeah, one of the two.
So limbo, this is what I talked about earlier. The limbo explanation is that you go to the only shared dreamer's limbo that has already been the limbo. So that's where you go.
So once limbo exists, it's limbo.
Well, because, for example, Mel and Cobb created a world in limbo.
Yeah.
But like, say you and I were in a shared dream for the first time ever. Neither of us have been there before. And then we end up in limbo. Now we are making up a new limbo.
No, but if we go back with someone else.
But if we go with Cobb, we would go to his limbo because he's already been there. He's already built it.
Gotcha.
So that explains
this,
that.
Just a quick time out here. This is one of the things I love about the movie is how carefully constructed the rules are for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, this could have easily been a movie filled with plot holes, and maybe there's some. I'm sure somebody's found some, but Nolan really went out of his way to carefully construct the rules of how everything works, and I think it's part of what makes the movie so good.
Yeah, one part, you know, when constructing the rules, and they talk about how long they're in there based on real life time.
Yeah.
I love the fact that when we see reality is that Mel and Cobb grew to be senior citizens together. Like, they have that brief shot of them as old people holding hands. Because in previous shots, we'd seen them as young people.
Yeah.
But they were actually, they spent 50 years in limbo together.
Yeah.
That's
crazy.
Yeah.
I love the... And
that actually goes along with what you're saying about what if you wake up now from this...
Yes.
From this world and all of a sudden Jesus isn't real.
Yeah.
That's what it would be like. They lived an entire lifetime together.
Yeah. I also love the whole like 20, 30 minute sequence where the van is falling off the bridge. That is one of my favorite parts of any movie. It's so well done.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Two quick things. Somebody, I think, Juno asks. Do you know what her name is in the
Ellen
movie?
Ellen Page is the actress.
Yeah, do you know what her name is in the movie?
I don't know.
It's like Arachnid or something. Like spider.
Yeah, sure, Arachnid.
Yeah. She asks, when they're killing the projections, when are you destroying those parts of his mind?
Oh.
That's an interesting question.
So people being in dreams is a bit like alcohol that way.
You think so? That's not exactly what they're trying to get across.
Just a little bit.
It's because our subconscious makes these manifestations. So are all these different people some part of your consciousness? Yeah. Do you think so?
Well, they say so in the movie that they're part of your consciousness. I mean, that's a clearly established fact. So I would have to say yes.
So we're killing parts of people's brains when we kill.
Yeah.
Interesting. And finally, it's
like alcohol.
Yep, just like it. And my last piece of evidence that the whole movie was a dream is that the opening scene, we are in limbo, old Sato's there, Cobb comes up, and they have a conversation. And we see the same conversation again towards the end of the movie, but stopped. Not so fast. It's not the same conversation.
Oh.
In fact, I wrote some notes here. They have the same words are spoken, but Cobb ends up finishing some of his sentences as if they'd already experienced this together. So this is not that scene.
I'm going to have to check that.
I
believe you. I'm just curious to go back and see it. That is really interesting.
Yeah. They have the same conversation, but it's not the words are not spoken by the same people.
Fascinating.
It is fascinating.
This is such a great movie.
So those are all of my notes that I took while watching the movie.
Those are good, high-quality notes. Well, most of them.
So listen to this.
High-quality notes.
I looked up Ellen Page's name because I've seen it three times. I still don't know what her name is in the movie, but here it is. Ariadne. Ariadne.
Wow.
A graduate student of architecture who was recruited to construct the various dreamscapes. The reason I'm reading this is because it gives the definition of her name. The name Ariadne alludes to a princess of Greek myth, daughter of King Minos, who aided the hero Theseus by giving him a sword and a ball of string to help him navigate the labyrinth, which was the prison of the Minotaur.
Okay, that's kind of sweet.
And the reason that's cool, when it comes to labyrinth, the maze, her job as architect. Make mazes. So Nolan said that Paige was chosen for being a perfect combination of freshness and savvy and maturity beyond her years, which is true as seen in Juno.
Yes. Was that your own commentary or part of Wikipedia?
I added the Juno part.
Okay.
Yeah. So Did you know, here's some other facts about the names of the characters. So Dom, we call him Dom, but really his name is Dominic, kind of obvious. But Mel, do you know what Mel is short for?
Melchizedek? Probably not.
Yes, Melchizedek. No, it's Mallory. So her character's name is actually Mallory. Thoughts?
Is there some significance to that that I'm not seeing?
Well, Mal is kind of a weird name, so I'm glad it actually is short for something. And I think Mel means bad in some language.
In Spanish, I think.
Yeah, so there.
I don't know, a little rusty on my Spanish.
Yeah.
And by rusty, I mean utterly incompetent with no knowledge whatsoever.
Okay. You want some good quotes from the movie?
Yeah, we want to.
Dreams feel real while we're in them. It's only when we wake up that we realize something was actually strange.
Yeah, how about that?
I think positive emotion trumps negative emotion every time.
Well, that sucks.
You don't think that's true?
I was being ironic.
She locked away a secret deep inside herself, something she once knew to be true, but chose to forget. Guess who chose to forget something at the end of the movie?
Cobb.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, so that would be further evidence of it being a dream.
This is Mal to Cobb. No creeping doubts, no feeling, not feeling persecuted, dumb, chased around the globe by anonymous corporations and police forces. The way the projections persecute the dreamer, admit it. You don't believe in one reality anymore, so choose to be here. Choose me.
That was intense.
Yeah, that was a reenactment.
Yeah.
So, Ben, great movie, huh?
Yeah, I love it.
Any last thoughts? Give me something that makes it seem like you had it planned out.
That I had what planned out?
Like a last closing thoughts.
Oh, well, I think that this is one of those movies that is not only interesting in terms of its content, but also engages us on a pretty deep level, because I think we do inherently wonder about the nature of reality as humans. We all dream, and so it kind of connects us universally there. So I think there's a lot here philosophically. There's some implications for our faith that we talked about that all kind of connect. It's a lot. The comparison to The Matrix is very apt in that sense, so I think it is an even more powerful movie than that one in terms of how it makes us think.
Gets
across.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, I love The Matrix, don't get me wrong, but I would put this one above that.
You know, it's funny, people don't talk about it right now as much as The Matrix, and maybe it's because Matrix has had some time to settle into the hearts of humanity.
Sequels are a little disappointing too for most people.
Speaking of sequels, I'm going to read something about where Inception ended up grossing money-wise, mm-hmm. and then I want to ask you about a sequel, so be ready.
Okay.
Inception ended up grossing $292 million in United States and Canada, $531 million overseas. In total, $823 million. Let me take one last thing. Sixth highest grossing movie in 2010. The film currently stands as the 29th highest grossing movie of all time. Inception is the second most lucrative production in the careers of both Christopher Nolan, only behind Dark Knight, and Leonardo DiCaprio, only behind Titanic.
Yeah.
So, with that in mind, studios like to make sequels when something does as well as that did. But the way the movie ended was perfect. You almost don't want there to be any more.
I think I could do a sequel if it had a different set of characters.
Completely different.
Yeah. I want Cobb's story to be ambiguous.
So how would that even be a sequel then? It would just be set in the
same... in a similar world.
Okay.
So that could be interesting.
This is where I land. The only way it could be a sequel is if what we saw at the end was a dream. Because assuming that we're going to keep the same characters, you're going to have... What I would say is most of what we saw was real, except for at the very end, Cobb never escapes his dream.
Yeah.
So then the sequel would be the team goes back to save him. But that doesn't sound good to me. I'd much prefer they never do another thing with these characters. Let it stand the way it is with its... ambiguity and just let it exist as one thing. I don't want, but we know that Tom Hardy, remember from Bane,
Tom Brady,
he signed on for, or he signed up for, I think, two more sequels. If I mean,
but that's pretty standard.
The studio just signs them up. I mean, they're not necessarily going to make them,
right?
So
so
those are my closing thoughts.
Good deal. Sequel. Should we hit the trap music?
It is time for a trap.
Yes.
Let's do some.
You're not ready. You're in the captain's chair.
Nope, it's okay. I just got to... Oh, look at all that.
Yeah, see? I told you. It's a bigger job than...
I'll get ready. I'll get used to it, everybody. It's time to transition now to listener feedback.
It's a trap.
Ben, you've got some emails. I got a voicemail. Where do you want to start?
How about I got a couple emails here from a new listener named Taylor. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. Mug, M-U-G-G-E.
Okay, sure. Muggy. Taylor Muggy.
He wrote in a couple emails on our Adjustment Bureau episode, Duel of the Fates.
Oh, that was a great episode.
But first, he had a question for us. Quick question. Who are your favorite authors? Mine are probably Tolkien, Lewis, Isaac Asimov, H.G. Wells, William Goldman, Peter Kreeft, and Greg Kukul.
Okay.
I have not heard of the last two. Who are your
favorite
authors?
Let's take turns. C.S. Lewis.
C.S. Lewis as well.
And I always talk about Ted Decker as a fiction author, but I haven't really read a lot of his stuff lately. So I think I'm going to step back from him. I've been reading a lot of N.T. Wright.
I think he's actually like sci-fi authors.
Oh. I don't read a lot of sci-fi books, to be honest.
You start quite a few.
I start a lot. I've started Stephen King's The Stand this year. I've started Robert Zelazny's Lord of Light this year.
Ursula K. Le Guin's Wizard of Earthsea.
Oh, I've started, yep, Wizard of Earthsea.
Didn't finish.
Nope.
Even though that book's like 10 pages long.
No, it's longer than that.
Not by much.
I bought and returned Neverwhere and American Gods.
Did you get those as a birthday present?
Yeah, I returned them so I get some money back.
Oh my gosh.
I did purchase Seth Graham Smith's Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, so I own that.
I like how all of your answers are either stuff that you have not finished, returned, or own and may actually crack the cover on someday.
You name a few and I'll try to think of some actual reads.
Obviously, Lewis and Tolkien are great. I'm a big fan of Dune. For sure, the first couple Dune books.
I started Dan Simmons' book Flashback this year.
Yep, Dan Simmons is one of my favorite genre authors. Roger Zelazny, Neil Gaiman, George R. R. Martin. It's kind of be a few of my favorites.
I started George R. R. Martin's Game of Thorns this year.
You don't get to say started anymore.
Game of Thorns. That goes back to my...
You did finish the first book, didn't you? No.
Well, I'm listening to it. On audiobook.
No, you're not.
It's on audiobook.
Yeah, I know it's on audiobook. That's not what I was disputing.
I started a book on audiobook called The Last Unicorn.
Oh, Peter S. Beagle.
Yeah, have you read it?
Yeah.
Okay. Started that one.
It's not my favorite.
I finished Robopocalypse.
And yeah.
Pretty good. You know, I've actually read a lot of graphic novels this year.
Yeah, Bill Willingham.
Bill Willingham, I would say. Fables.
Now I'm back to save her. Robert Kirkman, Walking Dead.
Walking Dead I've read a lot of.
No, you haven't.
What? I read through like 14.
You haven't. You've read like 6 volumes.
Oh, I've read 7.
That's not 14.
It's half.
Just because you have 14 available to you to read. And by the way, in a week it won't be half because volume 15 comes out in like a week or two.
Fables or Walking Dead?
Walking Dead.
When's next Fables come out?
Soon.
Very soon?
Yeah. I don't know how very soon. It's next month or two.
Good. So, I hope that answers your question.
I think it does.
I haven't been awesome at finishing books this year.
Just this year?
Pretty much ever in my life.
Okay.
Well, after... In the 2000s. Since 2000 started, book finishing went downhill. Yes. Oh, but Taylor, if you're interested, Ben and I are both on Goodreads.
Yeah, hop on Goodreads.
Yeah, so hop on Goodreads. If you want to find us directly, you can go to our website, go to our contributors page, and we have links.
Yes. Now, Matt, you listened to this episode, Duel of the Fates, recently, didn't you?
Really recently, yes.
So that's good, because he refers to a couple things we said that I don't remember, so you can help fill in the gaps. So here's what he says. I'm listening to your Free Will podcast, episode 10, Duel of the Fates, as we speak.
Wow.
Probably not anymore, though. He's probably finished it by now.
Yes.
Unless he's a lot
waiting for our answer.
And I disagree with your saying that there are things that happen that don't have a purpose. Do you remember us saying that?
Yes, I do remember saying that.
Okay. Here's why. If there is one tragedy, one free choice, even one freaking molecular vibration on Pluto that can happen without God's knowledge or approval, then we cannot trust him. I really do like you guys, but I take issue with this point. Atheists claim that there is too much useless pain and suffering. If that's true, if there is such a thing as any useless pain, then we should all be atheists. It is actually a tremendous comfort to me to know that every amount of suffering from my aunt's car accident to my flat feet is guided or at least approved by God for the purpose of my growth and his glory. There is no power at work in the universe that is greater than God.
Okay. Thoughts. Here's what I'd say to this, Taylor. I believe, obviously, I believe God is good and he is the most powerful thing and that he wants the best for us. I think that he can use a lot of bad things, but there's no way that every bad thing that happens is approved by him, or what was the other word he said? Approved
or caused.
No, that's impossible. I mean, because
It depends on what we mean by improved. If what we mean by approved is allowed to happen with his knowledge, then I think we would have to say yes, we do agree.
Allowed to happen in the sense that he allowed sin to be in the world. He could just snuff out sin.
But nothing is outside of God's control.
Yeah, nothing's outside of his control, but humans make choices that God doesn't like all the time.
Yeah.
And so because of sin and because of our bad choices, bad things happen that God, I don't think he approves of, other than he doesn't enforce his almighty power to just immediately stop it.
Yeah.
Every day, all of us are sinning in some way, big or small. He doesn't like any of it. Yeah. So I'm a little bit more on the negative side here in the sense of, as you were listening to that episode, Taylor, you probably heard me saying I've been struggling through some of these things in the past year or two when it comes to, why are there all these, it's not the problem of evil. That's not what I struggle with. I don't necessarily like the way God set up the world, even though I believe he's smarter than me. And so I'm just using my human judgment to make this call, which is wrong. So I understand I'm wrong, but
from your perspective,
from my perspective, I'd said in this episode, I would give up my free will if everybody went to heaven and no one had to suffer in hell.
Yeah.
I would be fine being a robot and having God order me around if I knew everybody was going to be okay in heaven. Yeah. But there's sin, there's hell. So, and God doesn't want, it says in the Bible that God wants nobody to have to go to hell, but people do go to hell. So right there is proof basically that not everything that happens is approved by God, but he allows everything to happen in the sense that he is powerful enough to stop anything he wants.
I think at a minimum, we can affirm that everything that happens with God's knowledge. It is stuff that he allows to happen. It's within his control, and he uses all things for good for those who love him. So we can affirm that at a minimum.
Yes, he can use everything for good for those who love him. But that applies to Christians. So what about to non-Christians? So there are bad things that happen to non-Christians that might not have any purpose.
Or it would have a purpose if they allowed themselves to come under God's will and lordship.
Right. So you're saying it would have a purpose if.
Yeah.
So do you think it's possible that a non-Christian gets in a car accident and, I don't know, whatever bad thing happens because of that, they break their arm. That had no purpose, possibly?
I think that we'd have to do, it's not quite so either or, because it has the potential of purpose.
Yeah, it does have the potential.
So the fact that it has the potential of purpose doesn't make it purposeless, but I also wouldn't go on the other end and say that it's purposeful because of its potential, but it's not yet fulfilled, because the statement God uses all things for good is a conditional statement within the Bible.
Yeah, so not everything that happens is good, but God is the most powerful thing.
Would you like point two that he makes?
Wow, that was only point one?
Yeah, so still...
Okay, go ahead.
This is the second email.
Yeah.
And then we can play our call, and then I think we will be done.
Good.
Still listening to the free will episode, and I've got a quick question for you guys. How do we define goodness? It's God. That's our standard. Our definition of objective good. That's what separates Christianity from atheism. They don't have a standard. We do. So you kind of touched on this towards the end, but it's kind of a moot point to say that God can do evil. Everything he does is good because he defines good. Let's redirect to that, and then I'll read the rest of the email.
Okay. Yeah. Why do you call me good? Only God is good.
Yeah. I don't remember if we said anything about that in the episode, but I would agree with what he is saying. So if we said the opposite, I've since changed my mind.
Wait. So what? Maybe we said that. Maybe we were talking about when good things or bad things happen. Possibly.
Yeah. Could God philosophically do evil? Is it possible for God to do evil?
I don't think it is possible.
Yeah, I would agree. So I think we're on the same page here.
Okay.
Also, a question about predestination. If you lock someone in a room without telling them, and they never find out, but decide to stay in the room anyway, did they still have a free choice? Did the person in the room have free will when they chose to stay in the room, even if they could have chosen differently? I would say yes. I can freely choose to follow Christ, even if predestination limits me from choosing otherwise. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Keep up the good work, guys.
So... I don't think I understand the room.
Okay, so
metaphor.
If you lock somebody in a room and you don't tell them, they never have the ability or they never have the knowledge that would enable them to make another choice.
They never realize there's anything else outside of the room.
Right, so they never have the knowledge that equips them to make another choice, but they have the ability to make another choice. And so this would be the argument that predestination works, where God designs us in such a way that our choice is limited by who we are, but we still do, we would theoretically have the ability to make another choice.
So, what is this question?
My dog's crying one last time.
At
our house.
Yeah, because we're going to move all the equipment. We're moving all the equipment to my place, so this is the last time here in your house.
Yeah, well,
weird.
And dog had to chime in one more time.
Okay, so I still don't think I understand the question.
Well, the question is, do you agree with that?
Do I agree with that somebody could live in a room and not leave it?
No, it's about predestination. Let me read it again.
Okay.
If you lock someone in a room without telling them, and they never find out but decide to stay in the room anyway, did they still have a free choice?
Did they have a choice to leave if they didn't know that there was a choice?
Yes. They have the ability to leave, but they don't because nobody has ever told them that they can.
Hmm.
So they technically have the ability to make that choice, but they do not have the knowledge to make that choice.
They have free will, because if they just look around, I'm sure they're going to find a door.
Well, okay, but let's just say that those, just for the sake of argument, they don't understand what a door is, and they don't know how to use it, and they don't know how to get out.
So do they have a choice? I guess if they don't know there's a choice, and they don't have a choice.
Even though they have the ability to make the choice.
Yeah, but if I have the ability... It doesn't make any sense.
It's a philosophical paradox.
Yeah, so if I had the ability to do something, but I didn't even know that that thing existed... That can't be a choice.
So you would say no.
I guess I'm going to say no.
So then he would say, yes, I can freely choose to follow Christ, even if predestination limits me from choosing otherwise.
This is the argument of, we've heard this all before, if somebody's in a village where they've never heard the gospel, they don't know Jesus exists, can they follow Jesus, even if they didn't even know that that was an option?
Yeah.
And in that case, I guess I would say yes, because His glory has been revealed in other ways.
But this also, and I don't know if this is the argument Taylor's making, but some people kind of put forward a modified form of predestination that says we have free will, but God creates each of us and designs our personalities, likes and dislikes and all of that in such a way that our choice is inevitable.
Yeah, I think we have talked about that in the show at some point, and I wouldn't even mind that in a sense, because I'd wish he'd create everybody that way.
Is that still free will, if that's the case?
No.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's not free will.
I think it's kind of a cop-out to say that's free will.
Yeah.
I see where people are going with the argument, but even if you still freely make the choice, but everything in you is designed so that you can make no other choice, you're basically just a wind-up toy at that point.
So it's okay for him to stay in the room?
Yes. So we would, we disagree with Taylor on that one, but we liked his previous one about God being the standard of all good.
Good thoughts, Taylor.
Very good.
Thanks. All right, let's see here. So I'm going to now play for us a voicemail that we have from Brian.
You see the play button down there?
Right there?
Yep. Click away.
Hey guys, this is Brian from the PB&J Show podcast, and I just got to listen to your Top 5 Dreams show. And there's a couple things I wanted to address. First of all, the deja vu. I'm not a scientist, but I've always heard that deja vu is actually your short-term memory bleeding into your long-term memory. So at the same time as you are experiencing something in your short-term memory, you're also experiencing it in your long-term memory, as in a memory, as a long, long ago memory. So it seems like it's happened before, even though it's happening right now. So that's the explanation I've always heard. And
he's clearly never seen The Matrix, because in The Matrix we learned that deja vu is actually glitches in The Matrix.
I don't know if that's science. You're not supposed to pause the voicemail.
Oh, we're not allowed to do that?
I never do.
Oh.
I suppose you could change the standard, but this is unprecedented.
It just happened.
This is unprecedented.
All right, let's let our competitor finish. You might remember Brian was a host on the PB&J show, which is...
I don't know if we're competitors anymore, because we both got beat by the Mormons.
That's correct. All right, let's play the rest of that now.
Lucid dreaming, I used to be involved in this. basically, there's a method to do it. What you do is all day long while you're awake, you ask yourself if you're dreaming, and then you try to do something that you could only do in a dream, and you get into that habit of asking yourself if you're dreaming, doing something that you can only do in a dream, and you'll eventually start doing that while you're dreaming, if it becomes a habit. And then once you finally do something that you can only do in a dream, you'll realize you're in a dream, and then you can basically do anything you want. I was involved in this for a while. I read about it in Psychology Today. And I kind of got addicted to sleep for a while. And I would do this. The only problem is I enjoyed flying in my dreams. And that would cause a little bit of an adrenaline rush, which would wake me up. So my dreams didn't last very long, but I would spend a lot of time sleeping to try to achieve that lucid dreaming. So if you don't have an addictive personality, I suppose it'd be okay to try that. But if you're like me, you might not want to try it. So that's the long and the short of that. So I enjoyed the show. Once again, this is Brian from the PB&J Show podcast. Bye.
Whoa.
Well, that was intense.
That was serious, Brian.
It's like confession.
It actually made me kind of scared to try to lucid dream.
I think we should give it a shot this week. And let's do it right now.
No, I'm not going to be able to fall asleep on the spot.
No. Not fall asleep, but what are you talking about? Like where you check during the day to see if you can do it. So I'm going to try and fly right now. I did not do it.
What should I try to do?
Oh, try and fly.
Try to be on an island?
Yeah, turn.
Nope. Oh, still here.
So we must not be dreaming currently.
Oh, so...
you see how that works? So... Like, I'm going to try it again. Still not flying.
Oh, cool. I want to fly. Can I fly too?
Nope.
Do I have to be on an island?
You can fly on the island.
Okay. Flying.
Yeah.
Let's just both try to fly. That seems...
No.
Because that's...
No.
Yes. I don't need to listen to you in my dreams. I only need to listen to you on the show.
Okay.
And at church. Because you're the executive pastor now.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, Ben. Well, we've played all the voicemails of the week. We've listened to all the emails.
Yep.
We've talked about Inception.
Yeah,
we've given our announcements.
Yeah.
This is it. Say goodbye to this edition of Rebel Underground Studios. Say
goodbye, studio.
Next week, we'll be talking from my beautiful apartment in Moundsview, Minnesota.
It's mildly beautiful.
Do you have any last things you want to say here?
Goodbye.
Here, I brought a video camera. Should we get this last scene?
No, I don't know if we need to do that. Oh, but here we are.
All right.
Getting the last scene.
We're on live now. So here we are in your studio.
It's just a thrilling end to the podcast.
Yeah, this is the big deal. So, well, everybody, let me play the outro music here.
Yeah, Matt Anderson sitting there in the captain's chair.
Well, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
And I am Ben DiBono.
And we are the Sci-Fi Christians signing off.